Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there, for The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthier weight and get on with your life. That is what it's all about. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to call in and talk with me today, that number is 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of dysfunctional or compulsive eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what is eating at you. I want to share an article I read, and it is from the New York Times this past Sunday, and it's called "Are You Depressed or Bored?" It's by Richard Friedman, Dr. Richard Friedman. He is a professor of clinical psychiatry at the Cornell Medical College. And this is what he said. There has been a lot of talk recently of how the coronavirus epidemic has unleashed a mental health epidemic of depression and anxiety. That the pandemic has amped up our stress levels is certainly true, he says. Indeed, there have been a few highly publicized surveys showing that levels of general psychological distress are on the rise. Well, of course they are. It is a pandemic. But he says he worries that calling this a wave of clinically significant. I will get back to this as soon as I talk to my caller. Hello? Hello, caller? Ronan, I don't hear anything. Just a second, he says. Okay, bear with us. Hi. Hi, Carly Gash.
Good morning, Dr. Nina. So good to hear you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. What's going on?
Yo, like 7:30 a.m., I got a call from my doctor, and I actually have Lyme disease confirmed. So I'm like in a very interesting mood today.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that.
Thank you. Yeah, so this brain fog thing and maybe whatever is going on with emotion and stuff might be part of it. And I would say that it's also the things we were talking about earlier. So no wonder I was overeating yesterday, binging literally, because I was expecting this call. And when doctors tell you, can we schedule a short follow up so we can tell you, like, the doctor wants to talk about the test results, you kind of know that it's there.
Well, you're laughing. Wait, Carly Gash, you're laughing, but that's scary. That is scary to get that call. Right. And
well, I was all nervous because I don't know. I Googled this disease. For me, it looks like I don't know I can get rid of it. But whoever I tell about it, people are like, oh my God, that's scary. I don't know. Maybe people in America scared, but I don't know. I just Googled it. I don't know the severity of it. I don't know, like in case when you say I have cancer, you kind of understand what's going on. But this disease is so like unknown for me, so I don't even know how to react. I know I have something to take care of.
Carly Gash, so I want to just suggest a couple of things. One is that binge eating that you were describing as you were waiting for these results, sometimes binge eating is a way of actually trying to relax our bodies. It's not always emotionally based. Sometimes it's just our way of managing anxiety, because if you eat a lot, what happens, and especially carbs, I don't know what it was you were binging on, but when you eat a lot of certain kinds of foods, you tend to get into a more relaxed state. And by the way, Carly Gosh, Jenny, our caller Jenny, is on Instagram right now, and she says Lyme disease can be very debilitating. She needs to take really good care of herself. So I want it's a serious diagnosis, and it's scary, mm-hmm. and it's of course treatable, but this mm-hmm. is a time for you to really take good care of all parts of yourself.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jenny, for mentioning that. That's what kind of all people telling me around that you need to like. But yeah, I'm very serious. Like, you can tell just because I'm like still running behind the tail of binge eating, and I'm very determined. It's either I get it done and like liberated myself from it, or I die. That's it. Whatever I'm after, I either get it or I die.
All right, Carly Gosh, in between either you beat binge eating or you die is something else, which is being interested in why you are binging. Because if you are turning to food, you are turning away from something else. It is a way of managing something. Binge eating is a frenemy. It helps you in some way, even though it also hurts you. And it might be might be easier for you to focus on binge eating than folk which you ostensibly can control. It may not feel like it, but it's between you and food. It's really between you and you versus a disease like Lyme disease, which is out of your control. It's something that happened to you, which can be very painful and intolerable to consider.
Well, thank you, Dr. Nina. I was going to say, I know that you're right. I was just going to continue. I know what I was escaping by binging yesterday. So I kind of already understood that it's there. Doctors only give you this call when you have it, and they want to talk to you so you don't like get crazy. So, and already in my psyche and my mind, I was already like getting ready because I'm a survivor. I'm from another country, like where you have to survive. So my mind kind of does this. It already plans ahead how to like get out of it. So I was binging, and I know what I was binging. It was like a great deal of sadness, actually. As my whole life, I felt I have something debilitating me because I feel a lot of that I can do a lot, but somehow, like something stopping me in my own body. I could feel that. And whatever I do it with, like overcoming, getting over the mountain to get there thing. And simple things which other people do no problem. For me, it's like hard and people don't get it. So even in that, I don't know how long I have it, but I felt. So the fact that it was confirmed was I had mixed feelings. I was very liberated and relieved at one point. Like, still, I feel like this way because, like, I finally found the reason why I feel this all the time. But on the other hand, I was really sad and mourning all the years I spent, I don't want to say underachieving, but really with the package I was born, like, internal talents and everything, I could do a lot. And when it comes to stuff like that,
So I want to point out to you a couple of things. One is that you just went from the sadness of getting this diagnosis of Lyme disease to berating yourself for all the years where you could have done more. The experience of passivity, which is there's nothing you can do. You have this disease. I mean, you can take care of yourself and all of that, but the passivity of having this happen to you to the accusation of what you coulda, shoulda, and woulda done. And I'm going to challenge you to just stay with, rather than go to look at all the years I've wasted and I should have done this and I could have done that, which is what you were saying when I cut you off. Rather than that, I challenge you to stay with the sadness of having a diagnosis like Lyme disease.
Well, you're absolutely right, but I was not kind of beating myself up for not achieving during these years. I was kind of sad. Sad because it's not unfair. Unfair, like what happened to me. I feel sad because it's unfair. I was just saying that with all I had in hand, I could really do all that. And this is what I love to do. I love doing things. I love learning, studying, achieving, creating. But like also when I'm constrained like that and I cannot express myself fully, it really makes me sad. Because like I have a lot of energy and I have a lot of ideas and now I'm like, I have this shit in my way. It's just like, you know, unfair and it makes me really sad. And I don't want to be the one who like blames her mom in her 30s that, oh, I have this miserable life because my mom did that to me. I know, but, you know, it's so hard.
Well, wait a minute. There's a big difference between blaming, being, oh, my mom did that to me, boo-hoo, which is being a victim, and saying, well, my mother was this way and treated me this way, or my family did this or that. And as a result of that, I learned to relate to myself and the world in a certain way. And now I'm learning to recognize how I learned to be is affecting me and affecting my relationship with myself, the world, and how that interplays with food. That is needs your attention. But saying, oh, I don't want to be a victim. No, you're not being a victim if you're explaining how you came to organize yourself the way you do in the world. But you're still now sad. You know, you're not expressing sadness about something that happened to you, whether that's Lyme disease or being born into a family, whatever. It's okay to have feelings about something that you had nothing to do with. It's okay to have feelings about whatever.
Honestly, Dr. Nina, I'm not very sad about what happened to me. Honestly, it sucks. And I'm like dealing with the trauma and processing my emotions. But I'm kind of person who I like being happy. So whatever life throws in my way, whatever family, poverty, Lyme disease, Schwann disease, I don't care. I will deal with it. I'm not like the one who gives up and says, oh, well, I cannot do it. No, I will turn every stone. I will go to people and I will create a vaccine if necessary if it didn't exist in the world. I'm this type of person. It's just I'm more angry and sad about this all these obstacles, you know? Like, oh, you're born. Let me give you like a riddle. Here's the family. Here's this. And like when I feel that I somehow manage something, it's, oh, it's not like here's the Lyme disease. Like, be busy with this one now. So I just am angry and sad about spending time of my life on this stuff. Like, you know, like how I don't know, when the sprinters run, they all stay on the same mark. And when you hear the sound, all of them start running. And you actually the fastest wins. I feel like before getting to the zero point with other runners, I have to like go back to the all the way to the end of the stadium, and they put a like I don't know concrete cement slab on me, and they say run with them. You know, this is how I feel. It's just so unfair, and I still am pulling results. I'm not like giving up, but it's like how much slab do you want to put on me? You know what I mean? But it's already proved I will get rid of everything. It's just I'm just tired of I don't know. It's just so hard.
Of course you are. It's too much. It's being born into the family that you were born to in Kazakhstan and dealing with everything that in itself entails. It's the circumstances that you've shared of your birth. It's having coming to this country and showing a lot of courage and tenacity and doing your best and maybe not feeling like you're getting ahead and then getting Lyme disease. Of course you feel bad. How could you not? Of course you do. Absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. And honestly, I have a plan. I don't know. This Lyme disease, when I got it, I was not frustrated. I was like, okay, that's sad. It's going to take my time, but I'll figure it out. Because it's studied, so there is information out. And I already, if I came to a place where I found the reason, like got deep to what my mom stuff in psychoanalysis, well, Lyme disease is like biological disease. I will figure that out too. It's like easier than doing psychoanalysis, I guess, and changing your behavior.
You will, but before you go to, yes, I'm going to beat this and I'm a fighter, allow yourself to say ouch. No. Allow yourself to say,
to do what?
To say ouch. To say, oh, the world has just sort of bitten me. And rather than stuff that down figuratively with food or comfort yourself with food, allow yourself to acknowledge and validate your truth, what this feels like, own it, feel it, and then tell yourself, give yourself the pep talk. So often when we give ourselves the pep talk, we do it as a way of almost denying or dismissing our pain. We've got to do both. First, acknowledge and recognize that hurts. This diagnosis hurts. This situation hurts. This is upsetting. This is enraging. This is painful. This is whatever it is. And then you make the best of it. When you go straight to making the best of it, it's like dismissing your pain, dismissing your anger, dismissing your truth.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. I love how you always keep me in this place and paying my attention to be there. Like, yes, I jump to like solution because I see all people around me doing this in my country, in this country, here. Like, yeah, we need to learn technology. And I'm very grateful that you always make me acknowledge this stuff, as honestly, this muscle isn't trained in me, so I will do it more and more. And you're right, I need to acknowledge, and I guess I just really need to go there instead of being angry, which is an active emotion, accept like the passive emotion of sadness and really hardness of it.
As it's, yes.
Yes. I don't know. It's just really so, but I know I'll figure it out, but in the moment it's like, man, I didn't want that in the first place. Not the family, not the disease. It was not my choice, honestly. But like DBT therapist says, things might happen to us. And we might be not responsible for what we have, but it's our responsibility to deal with that. So I kind of understand that. But at the same time, honestly, it's just, I don't know. It's just so.
It sucks. It's
I don't feel like it sucks. Like part of me is actually happy, as it's going to be fun to figure out this stuff. And Carly, like that, honestly,
Carly,
I'm honestly a very curious person.
Carly,
like the scientist.
Stop. I'm going to mute. Stop.
Okay.
Do not go to a place where you say, hey, I welcome this disease. What a wonderful opportunity it is. No, that is a defense mechanism. You're reversing it. You're reversing the bad thing and you're making it a good thing. It's a bad thing. Let it be the bad thing. You can get through the bad thing. You don't have to turn it into an opportunity. You get to say, this is bad and this hurts me. Otherwise, I am here to tell you, you will turn that into some kind of, I'm bad for eating such and such. Look at the bad thing I did rather than look at the bad thing that happened to me. Look, I binged rather that I feel so bad about myself rather than look at the bad thing that happened to me and I've got to mourn it. Please don't turn lemons into lemonade quite so fast. First, you got to say, it's a lemon. Maybe later you'll come to the place where you learn something from this, but not now.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nina, for pointing this defense mechanism out, as I didn't even know that it's a defense mechanism, because this is how I went through shit in my life, and it worked. But I want to be aware and in touch with my everything, feelings and everything now. So, like, from this perspective, if you took away all my defense mechanisms and me wiggling around, I would say it sucks. It's shit.
It is just, yes, it is.
So bad. It is so, I mean, it's so bad that I'm, like, again, running into my defense mechanism of laughing. It's like, how bad can that be? How worse can that be? Like, yes. Having all the shit from one side, having the psychological stuff I'm digging out and, like, liberating myself from, and on top of that, having a biological disease. It's just double whammy. That's what it is. It's just frustrating.
Yes. Now you're in touch with your truth. And when you're in touch with your truth... Yes, it does. It does.
I don't want that. Honestly, I just don't want to deal with all this shit. I will, but I don't want to. Why would I be wanting to? It's just not fair. My whole life, I was really fighting so hard and working so hard to get this shit on top of that. Just like, really... And there is, I don't know. I just don't have this loving family people have.
Some people have a
loving. I don't know.
Some people have a loving family. That is true. Some people have a hateful family. That is true. And it's not like the whole world has a loving family and then there's Carly Gash. Believe me.
Yeah, stuff like that.
But you get to deal with your circumstances that you have. And not compare them to others, but just say, yes, this is my circumstances and I'm going to deal with it. And I have a range of whatever feelings I have about it and I'm going to own them and I'm going to respond to them. And I'm not going to pretend that the shit is actually sugar. My new phrase, anyway. I won't even finish my sentence. Okay, I'll explain that. Sometimes people turn shit into sugar and sometimes people turn, you know, sugar into shit. So you don't want to pretend that the pile of steaming, you know what, is actually sugar. See it for what it is and deal with it. You can do that. And you have me here every Wednesday and also at other times, as you know, as you've been open about how you're in my Inner Circle program. You are not alone. You may have felt alone. You might have been alone as a child, but you are not alone. There are people here for you and with you. And you have the Binge Free Babes as well. Use them. Lean on them. You have a community. You are not alone. Okay?
Thank you so much, Dr. Nina. Honestly, you always, you know everything. Can you become our president, please?
Well, I don't know everything, but I know a few things. And I again, really want to commend you for, you don't have to compliment me. I want you to really take in that you are not alone and that there are people there who are for you, unlike as you were growing up. Maybe right now you
Thank
can go
you so
on
much.
The Facebook page for the Binge Free Babes and maybe maybe share some of what's going on. Allow yourself to.
Thank you so much. I will.
Okay. Well, I'm very sorry again about this diagnosis. Lyme disease is pretty awful. Yes, you're going to get through it. But I'm still really sorry you're having to deal with it.
Thank you so much. And honestly, your metaphor, like comparing pile of shit to sugar, helped me a lot. Because most of the times I take shit and I'm saying, oh, it's not that. It doesn't smell that bad. Just let's clean it out. But now I'm like, oh, no, it's shit and I'm going to clean it out. So.
Okay. You do that. And I look forward to hearing from you next week and seeing how you're doing.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nina. Big
hug
for you.
Hug right back at you. I can't wait for the day that we can actually give hugs. But I'll in the meantime, a virtual one will do.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
So often we're taught to look on the bright side that we end up discounting our truth. And if you don't see and honor and process, work through your truth, it's going to come out some other way. All right. So this article, again, Are You Depressed or Bored, by Dr. Richard Friedman. He says, we don't know yet whether what we're seeing in these surveys, he's talking about the surveys that show people feel very bored and frustrated. I think I got ahead of myself. He says many of his patients who've struggled with depression and anxiety have surprisingly not experienced flare-ups of their psychiatric illnesses over the course of the past few months. They do, however, say that they feel bored and frustrated. Lots of friends and colleagues, too, say life is taking on a stultifying quality of sameness. We don't know yet whether what we're seeing in those surveys will bloom into a full-fledged mental health epidemic. The surveys are, after all, quick snapshots of how we feel during a relatively brief period of time. He says, to be sure, little of what we're experiencing now is pleasant, but it's worth remembering that boredom is a normal emotional state that we shouldn't conflate with a serious illness like depression. That doesn't mean we shouldn't address it. And here goes, he's going to address it. Clinical depression is characterized by an inability to experience pleasure, insomnia, loss of self-esteem, and suicidal thinking and behavior, among other symptoms. In boredom, the capacity for pleasure is totally intact, but it is thwarted by an internal or external obstacle, like being quarantined. Boredom also produces none of the other symptoms of depression. While boredom isn't depression, the mass experience of boredom isn't something frivolous. In fact, boredom is an aversive and nearly universal psychological experience that can lead to trouble, which makes it worthy of our exploration. If you want to design an experiment to bring about boredom, you couldn't do better than the pandemic. Cooped up in our homes and apartments, we've been stripped of our everyday routines and structure. And without distractions, we're left feeling understimulated. It is this state of restless desire to do something, anything, without a way of achieving our goal, even if we don't yet know what it is, that is the essence of boredom. He goes on to say, people will go to remarkable lengths to escape these feelings. Consider the following experiment. Researchers asked a group of people to spend just 15 minutes in a room and instructed them to entertain themselves with their own thoughts. They were also given the opportunity to self-administer a negative stimulus in the form of a small electric shock. Strikingly, 67% of men and 25% of women found being alone with their thoughts as so unpleasant that they chose negative stimulation over no stimulation. They would rather give themselves electric shocks than just be with themselves. Pretty interesting, isn't it? This suggests that self-reflection can be intrinsically aversive and that we have a near hysterical dread of boredom. Is it any surprise that we structure our lives to avoid it? Apparently, this wasn't always so. The very concept of boredom seems to be a modern invention. Boredom did not enter the lexicon until the mid-19th century. Before that, tedium was an expected part of life. It was only with the rise of consumer culture in the 20th century that people were promised nearly continuous excitement. Boredom was the inevitable consequence of such unrealistic expectations. Our modern intolerance of boredom might even be fueling the spread of coronavirus as novelty seekers who have had enough of the lockdown head to bars, beaches, and amusement parks. The fact is that humans crave, to a varying degree, stimulation, and a quarantine prevents us from getting very much of it. Those who are more novelty and sensation seeking, like teenagers or college students, are particularly prone to boredom. Some people who use lots of recreational drugs, because at baseline they're walking around in an understimulated state in which the everyday world feels uninteresting, are also vulnerable to an aversion to boredom. I have another caller, Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hi,
Jenny.
I loved what you were talking about. That was so interesting.
Well, I think so too. And after your call, I'm going to finish this because he has some additional thoughts about boredom. And of course, boredom really aligns with what eating. Lots of people say they eat when they're bored. No, they just really can't be with themselves. Or maybe they drink rosé when they're bored because they have a hard time being with themselves.
Well, what's interesting, and I'm wondering if some other of your callers feel the same way I do. It's interesting because I have found that a lot of my clients and friends have like FOMO, you know, like fear of missing out, right? And they need constant stimulation. And I have been busy my entire life, and I crave boredom. Like, I'll joke about it to people. Like, I can't wait to be bored. And so this, the pandemic situation, I love like being with myself. Like, I'm kind of a loner in that way. However, you know, I do like socialization, you know, not so much stimulation, but like, I love to see my girlfriends and my family and the people I love, you know, to have a meal or a drink or to catch up or whatever. But in general, I have not been like bored. Like, I really enjoy like catching up on TV and like hanging out with my dog and like sitting and looking at the birds. I'm kind of like an old lady. I'm like ready for the retirement home, hence the rosé. I just want to like drink rosé and like play bingo and not have a schedule.
Well, so you sound like a pretty young you sound like a pretty young old lady.
Well, I'm going to be 42, so I'm middle aged, I guess you would say. But I'm really getting nervous, actually. And I do want to go back to work because I miss making people. I do makeup, so I miss making people like pretty and being with like, you know, on set with people. But I'm scared of like actually going back to work with what's going on with, you know, COVID and whatever. And I want to make money, but if someone just like, I don't know, paid me to sit at home and hang out with my dog or like to do my, you know, animal rescue stuff, which I love fostering, I would just do that because I find it enjoyable to like look out the window for 20 minutes and watch squirrels. It's been like wonderful. I don't want to go back out. I have no urge to like go to restaurants and bars and shit like that at all. Excuse my language.
That's okay. I talked about turning sure to shit and back. Yeah. Use that. You can use the S word. One thing that strikes me is that you're actually entertaining yourself. You are, you're watching TV, you're playing with your dog, you're doing things, but you've called before and you've talked about the intolerable experience of anxiety. And sometimes when people are not doing something, when they're not actively able to do something or distract themselves, they distract themselves in other ways, or they try to cope in other ways. Using food is one way that people do it. Or in your case, as you've said many times, rosé, which both calms you down and can distract you and can turn off the fear voice. So you are lucky in that you are enjoying your own company and that you can, you know, watch squirrels for 20 minutes. But I wonder how you would feel if, you know, you were more in an anxious state, then it might be more intolerable.
Yes. And I do have those moments when I know I have to leave the house, when I know I have to go to the grocery store, when I know I have like things to do. I do get in that like anxious manic state, which is when I lean toward, you know, something to help me for sure. Because I think I said this before, I don't have fear. I have fear of going out, not fear of missing out.
So-go.
I really do. And now that traffic has started up again, it's added a new level of anxiety to my anxiety about going out. I'm really getting used to, like just waking up and watching squirrels and playing with my dog and stuff. And now like the thought of, and I, like I said, I do want to go back to work for many reasons, but I also don't for other reasons, you know, like safety and stress and anxiety and such. So that, you know, that is where my anxiety lies, when I know I have to leave the house. And then when I'm at home, I'm like, oh, everything's good.
Well, you feel safe. You're in your cocoon.
And but that's not good. That's not good, because I have to leave the house eventually, right?
Well, there's a reality to your anxiety about leaving the house, especially if it's work. You're a makeup artist, which means you can't socially distance be a makeup artist unless you have really long arms, which I don't think you have 6 feet arms. So that means getting up into someone's face and all of those things in a time of a pandemic, that is scary. Being out in the world while there's no treatment, while there's no vaccine, while the numbers are what they are. I know you're in the LA area and we're still not doing well. So there's a legitimacy to being worried about being outside of the house. Inside your house is safety.
And the non, and I'm still, I talked about this last time. I mean, there's still so many people not wearing masks that I'm just like, and I don't know. I just like, I get not just anxiety, but I get angry when I leave the house. Like, I get all of these emotions like flood me when I leave the house, when I see people not wearing masks, when people are honking their horns. It's just like no one, it's like everything has gone back to the way it was before the pandemic. Like, no one, is everyone in denial? You know?
A lot of people are in denial. So let me ask you something. If we dig a little bit deeper, when we think about these people who are not wearing masks or sort of minimizing or denying the risk, what comes to mind in your past? So they're not protecting themselves, but they're not protecting you, because we wear masks to protect ourselves and others. So what comes to mind for you about not being protected?
Oh yeah, it definitely, it's interesting. I was talking to my therapist about this week. It's brought back all of these feelings of safety, which is like, it's the key thing in my life. It's like, I just need to safe and door. It's just hierarchy, right? Because as a child, I grew up with an alcoholic parent it was never safe. I just never felt safe. I never felt taken care of or protected. In fact, I was, you know, kind of put into a parental role at a very young age, helping my mother, because, you know, my dad was like another child. And so, you know, I really, and even with like this whole, with the politics, when I look at like it's hard to even watch the news, but when I read the news, I really think about what's going to happen, how I'm going to feel if Trump gets elected again, because I have felt unsafe since he has been our president, this person that is, you know, supposed to be protecting our country and our livelihoods and our, you know, our peace of mind. And I feel very vulnerable just in general lately, which is something that scares me.
It's bringing up the current situation, is bringing up the past, which is feeling vulnerable, feeling unprotected. You can only rely on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You can only rely on yourself. And now you can't actually only rely on yourself. When you're a kid, to an extent, you can rely on yourself. You can take care of dad. You can help mom. You could do whatever you could do. But now you can't protect yourself from COVID any more than you. There's only so much you can do. All you can do is stay at home or wear a mask. But when you're out in the world and there are people, it's like being surrounded by your parents, the parents of your childhood. Yep. And you're getting triggered, and then you feel the feelings in the present about the mask deniers, and plus the feelings of the past about the people who were not protecting you as they were supposed to. And then it becomes very overwhelming.
Yeah.
So the key is I'm glad that you're seeing a therapist. The key is to work through those past wounds. Because when they are healed, then you only have the situation in the present affecting you. Now, of course, right now that's pretty horrible, but you don't have both the present and the past when you heal the wounds of the past.
Yeah,
it's finally.
And it's funny. I thought, because I went to therapy for many years ago, and I thought I had kind of healed those wounds, and then they all came suddenly flooding back. You know, and I was like, oh God, why again? You know, why again? Why is this always happen to me? And then I have a pity party for myself, and then I feel guilt, and then that causes my anxiety.
Well,
I'm tired, Dr. Tired.
Why does this always happen to me? Indicates that there's some idea in there that you've brought this upon yourself, or, you know, not in reality, but that somehow it's directed at you instead of, you know, instead of why is this happening to me? You want to say, this is happening to me, and how do I need to deal with it? How do I need to take care of myself right now and not call your feelings a pity party? That does nobody any good.
Very true. Very true. I mean, I don't know why I feel so much guilt for having feelings and wanting to take care of myself, but I do. And I probably got that from, you know, from,
I find that people who have that kind of guilt, and I don't know if you will relate to this, but that when you want something so much, you're a kid and you want so much to feel safe and be taken care of and have a different kind of dad who's not an alcoholic and a mom who's not an enabler. And you just want to be, you want to feel safe and you want to feel taken care of, and it doesn't happen. It feels humiliating. It's humiliating to want something you don't get. And then
That's an interesting word for you. Yeah.
And then wanting something can bring back that kind of humiliation, which can get confused with guilt. You know, because we feel guilty when we're doing something we shouldn't do, or when we're not doing something we want to do. And feeling guilty about your feelings, well, you know, where did you learn you're not allowed to have feelings? Maybe it's humiliation morphed into guilt.
That could very well be. I never thought about it that way. I never even, that's very interesting way of looking at it. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to look up the word humiliation in the dictionary and really focus on that word and see if that's what I'm feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a passive, awful feeling. Guilt is about something you're doing or not doing. Humiliation is just a state of feeling, it's almost akin to shame, feeling bad about yourself, feeling, but not shame. So the shame, the humiliation / sort of shame can get displaced into guilt, which is, I should be doing this rather than, this feels terrible.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to look into that humiliation feeling.
Okay. Well, do so with a
from a place of,
of grace and curiosity.
I will do that, because that's sad. I don't want myself to feel that way.
Right. We don't want you to, nobody wants you to feel this way. And that's a great stance to take of, hey, I want to take care of myself rather than accuse myself of having a pity party. How about, I don't want to feel this way. What can I do to make myself feel better or differently? How do I heal?
Yeah. I think that's one thing we all need to, I think everyone can do, is like try to find some compassion and empathy for like you. We try to find it for everyone else, you know, or animals or babies or whatever. But, and, you know, we don't really turn that inward sometimes. And, you know,
I just want to add. I just want to add that Carly Gash is writing on Instagram, I'm sorry, Jenny, I'm sorry you're suffering from such a terrible childhood. And to your point, Jenny, to Carly Gash and everyone who is listening, have that same kind of stance that you have for others, kind, understanding, have that for yourself. And the world will change, I promise.
I believe you. And thank you. Nina, thank you again.
You're very welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, just have a couple more minutes and I'm going to finish this article. Being bored might feel intolerable, but unlike clinical depression, it will never seriously impair your function or kill you. While depression calls for treatment, boredom is a normal state. It doesn't need treatment any more than everyday unhappiness requires an antidepressant. But we can still do something about it. We can perhaps even take advantage of it. Sure, boredom is a sign that we're under-aroused, but if we sit long enough with our uncomfortable thoughts and feelings, boredom could provide us with an opportunity to rethink whether we are spending our lives in a way that is worth, what things we might change to make life and ourselves more interesting. What things might you change to make life and more interesting? He says he does not mean to suggest that the pandemic might not cause an increase in serious mental illness. That's certainly possible. He's simply saying that it's premature to make that judgment. In the meantime, let's not medicalize everyday stress. Let's not dread boredom, but try to use it to our good. And you know, I really like that article, because so often we can't be with ourselves. I mean, with the experiment, a large percentage of men and a significant percentage of women gave themselves negative shocks rather than just be alone with themselves for 15 minutes. That shows how hard it is to be with ourselves. And you know, it's hard to be with yourself when you're with a self-critic. When you don't have a kind, nurturing, loving part of yourself there for you. When you have a critic, or when you have nothing at all, boredom is unbearable. And that's why so many people use food when they're bored, escape boredom by eating or doing other things. But when you are alone with a kind, good part of yourself, the part of yourself that maybe shows up for other people, but not for yourself, it is a lot easier to be. To be. So practice, take, you know, a minute to be with yourself. See what comes up. Be curious. What am I going to think about in this silence? What am I going to feel in this silence? Maybe boredom is a doorway to understanding yourself more. At least I hope it is. Thank you so much, all of you, for joining me here today on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio, or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you listen to podcasts. Please take good care of yourself this week. Be safe. Be healthy. be a little bored. See what happens. And I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.